to work. He filed for disability once they settled into Champaign.
To be honest, I've always had problems with bills, even before a family. A home is very expensive, I'm not going to lie. You've got to pay gas, lights, and food.
The family first moved to a two-bedroom house in a residential area near Sam's Club in the northwest side of Champaign. Although less expensive than the house they live in now, it was too small for 9 people. In 2004, the family bought a home in the Sawgrass neighborhood. At 6 bedrooms, there was more room for the family, but at twice the cost. Olea's 4 oldest children split the nearly $2,000 a month mortgage. His own disability payments top out at just over $900 each month. His wife is not working. Housing experts agree that for any home to be affordable, a resident must not pay more than 30% of their monthly income to housing cost. Yet, of the nearly 28,000 households in Champaign County who owe a mortgage on their homes, 1 in 4 pay more than that, according to 2011 Census Bureau estimates. Esther Pat is director of the Champaign-Urbana Tenant Union. She says that housing needs for the area's low-income families are most often overlooked.
This has always been frustrating to me. So many people, when they talk about poverty, don't even talk about housing. It's like they just assume that that's taken care of, and there are other issues, but housing is the biggest expense.
Renters in the community have more problems. The demand for quality rental housing by university students has overshadowed the market for affordable housing. It's also inflated rent prices. And over the past 6 years, rents in Champaign County have increased about 30%. The fair market rate for a two-bedroom home in Champaign County in 2006 was just over $614. That rate is now $785 a month. Pat estimates families need an annual income of $26,000 to be able to afford rent for a two-bedroom home.
I mean, rents are higher now than they were 6 years ago, 10 years ago, and incomes are not. So it's harder to find cheaper places.
The latest census estimates show that 64% of renters pay more than 30% of their income for housing. Pat notes the need for shelter outranks a person's ability to pay. Too often, she says, families will rent above their means and then face eviction when it becomes too difficult to continue to pay. If evicted, then families are forced into places that may be more affordable, but also may be substandard.
Housing is the biggest expense, and it's just, I mean, it's a top priority for people to have shelter. And we always talk about food, shelter, and clothing. You can get food in this community, you can get clothing in this community. There are all sorts of services that will provide both of those to you. Shelter, not so much.
The high housing cost and lower incomes have pushed Olea and his family to visit food pantries twice a month to supplement their food budget. It was never easy to do. But feeding the family now has become much more difficult.
We keep ourselves busy. The truth is we go to shelters and pantries where they offer food and other things. That's how we go by surviving. The money that my kids make is just to pay the bills and everything, so we're left with little more than nothing.
Yet, he says, the family is happy in their home despite the challenges they face.
The best for me that we've seen, the best that's happened to me, is that my children have learned English and that they are studying.
As it is now, that education is hard to finance, and his younger children are working more to help lessen the family's financial strains. But jobs do not offer the economic security they used to. We'll explore that topic tomorrow. For Illinois Public Media, I'm Pam Dempsey of CU Citizen Access.
This story was funded by the Marguerite Casey Foundation. For more information on this story, visit cu-citizenaccess.org. And we have an update for you in the Major League Baseball playoffs, the National League Division Series. The St. Louis Cardinals are now leading the Washington Nationals 4-0 in the top of the second inning. Pete Cosma just homered, driving in 3 runs. The University of Iowa Press chooses 2 winners each year for the Iowa Short Fiction Awards. One of the winners this year teaches at Knox College in Galesburg. Rich Egger tells us about him.
The writer is Chad Simpson. His collection of short stories is titled Tell Everyone I Said Hi. During a book signing at Market Alley Wines in Monmouth, Simpson said his stories often take a somber tone.
What gets me started writing a story usually is an image that I want to get to. And in order to get to that image, I have to find a kind of tone, an approach to take to the story. And I have to figure out who the characters are and what the situation is. And I'm doing that all kind of while writing. And I feel like, I don't know, I keep hearing from people who've read the book about how much loneliness there is in it and about how much dislocation and isolation. And I don't think about those things necessarily while I'm writing. I did think about it maybe when I was arranging the stories, but in mostly abstract ways. And I think some of it might have to do with living in the Midwest where I live. I think I'm not necessarily like a lonely person, or, but I do see people here who experience a certain kind of longing, and I think that, and I experience a certain kind of longing on occasion. I think that's one of the things that gets me putting my pen on the page, and I think that might have something to do with it.
The book is fiction. Is there any element? Are there any elements of your life in the book? Anything from real life that you converted into fiction?
Definitely, there's a lot of real life in this. The first story involves a narrator whose brother has been run over by his own car, and that very much happened to my own brother, who was just standing right here and left. He had that happen. I do it, and typically when I'm working from real life doesn't make the best stories. It makes good anecdotes that we can tell to people who know us and maybe love us or like us, and know, but it doesn't make good fiction that strangers might read. And so when I work with a story like that where there's an anecdote where my brother got run over by his own car, then I have to figure out how to make that be meaningful to someone else. And that's kind of my task as a fiction writer. And there's certainly a story that's inspired by my nephew that's in the book. And I love my nephew a lot. And when I was creating that character, part of what I was trying to do was make readers love this character as much as I love my nephew. But then to do that, I have to invent a lot of things along the way. So, but a lot of them, and if they don't take place, or if they don't come out of like kind of real life events or people, they certainly come out of real life emotions that I experience on a daily basis, and then kind of want to figure out a way to get onto the page in story form.
Now that the book is finished, do you have a particular story in it that is your favorite? Or is that like asking someone to choose their favorite child?
I think usually, for me, my favorite stuff is like the stuff I'm working on at the moment, or the newer stuff. And so,
What are you working on at the moment, now that this book is completed? Are you starting something else?
Yeah, I wrote, while this book was still kind of being written, toward the end of it, I wrote a draft of a young adult novel, and I've been trying to get my way. I finished the draft and sent it off to my agent at the time and to some editors and got some feedback, and I'm ready. I'm kind of beginning to feel my way back into that and figure out how to solve its problems and make it do what it wants to do. And I've also written and published about, this book is comprised of 18 stories, and I think I've written and published probably another 30 or so essays, 30 stories over the course of the time I'd written all of these. And so I'm always working on new stuff in general, like usually always trying to write a story or write an essay. And I've been writing too lately linked stories that are all told by the same narrator. So that's one of my main projects that I've been giving a lot of time to, and that I kind of like a lot right now. I'm excited by it.
Knox College professor Chad Simpson is author of Tell Everyone I Said Hi. The collection of short stories received this year's John Simmons Short Fiction Award from the University of Iowa Press, which has published the book. Simpson says he felt lucky to win the award and felt overwhelmed when he first held a copy of the book in his hands. He hopes readers feel a little less lonely when they finish the book. Rich Egger reporting.
WILL programs are made possible by Women's Health Practice and Dr. Suzanne Troopin, offering obstetrics, gynecology, and fertility services on Neal Street in Champaign. Women's Health Practice is a Health Alliance medical plan provider and is accepting new patients. More information is available at womenshealthpractice.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 10th of October, 2012. It's the birthday of Giuseppe Verdi, born in a village in Parma, Italy, 1813. Parents ran a tavern, but they recognized musical talent in the boy. They bought him a little piano, which he kept for the rest of his life, became organist at his church, went off to a nearby town, boarded with a wealthy grocer who liked him and wanted to support him, and whose daughter Verdi ended up marrying. He wrote an opera, Oberto, which was performed at La Scala, the most important theater in Italy, 1839. He was just 26 years old, and then tragedy struck. His wife died, encephalitis. Verdi had already lost two children in infancy, said he would never write music again. But then someone sent him the powerful libretto for Nabucco, and he could not resist it. He turned it into an opera, which premiered 1842. Audience applauded for 10 minutes after the first scene. Verdi used the same librettist for his next opera, Lombardi, a librettist who tended to put off going to work. Verdi locked him in a room to get him to write on time, once made the mistake of locking him in the room with his wine collection. Verdi wrote a total of 26 operas, including Rigoletto, La Traviata, Aida, and Falstaff. It's the birthday of the playwright Harold Pinter, born East London, 1930. Went to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts in London, didn't like it, left after a couple of years. First full-length play was The Birthday Party, which debuted in the West End, which, like many of Pinter's plays, came to be called comedies of menace, ordinary situations turning ominous or absurd for inexplicable reasons. His big hit was The Homecoming, 1965, about a man who brings his wife home to meet his all-male family, and she stays with the family to be their caretaker and prostitute. Pinter said that after the opening of The Homecoming in New York in 1967, it was one of the greatest theatrical nights of his life. Wealthy audience, women in mink, men in tuxedos. As soon as the curtain opened, they hated the play. The great thing was, Pinter said, the actors went on and hated the audience back even more. It's the birthday of the novelist and short story writer R.K. Narayan, born in Madras, India, 1906, author of Swami and Friends and other books. He was a close friend of Graham Greene, though they met only once briefly in London. They carried on a correspondence for years and years, and it took them around 15 years to go from Dear Mr. Narayan and Dear Graham Greene to Dear Narayan and Dear Graham. Here's a poem for today by Robert Pinsky, First Early Mornings Together. Waking up over the candy store together, we hear the birds waking up below the sill and slowly recognize ourselves, the weather, the